So we are in the 13th chapter. We will recite up to 4th verse. We will recite first 4 verses. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We'll recite together first 4 verses. Arjuna Uvacha Prakritim Purusham Chaiva Kshetram Kshetrajnameva Etad Veditum Icchami Jnanam Jnejam Cha Keshava. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Idam Shariram Kaunteya Kshetram Ityabhidhiyate Etat Yoveti Tam Prahuh Kshetrajna Iti Tadvidaha Kshetrajnam Chapi Mam Vidhi Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata Kshetra Kshetrajna Yor Jnanam Yatta jnanam matam mama tat kshetram yatcha yadrikcha yadvikari yatascha yat satayo yat prabhavascha tat samasena meshrano. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So we had a gap, I think, after the previous slide, isn't it? So we'll proceed to the 4th verse. So this chapter, 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Nature, Enjoyer and Consciousness, is a little technical chapter. But if one patiently tries to understand this chapter, it can help one to know the truth. And it can free one from all worries in life. I came across a very interesting saying about worry. Worry is something that everyone has in this world, isn't it? But this proverb says, worry never robs tomorrow of its sorrow, but it surely saps today's strength. It says, worry never robs tomorrow of its sorrow. People generally think that if I worry, then I'll become better. But the worry never makes you better, it makes you go from bad to worse. So it robs you of your today's strength and makes you a weakling even more. So what is the source of worry in this world? The source of worry is darkness. The source of fear and anxiety is darkness in the heart. So this chapter enlightens us about such sublime truths, after knowing which one will lose all anxieties. 6 things are explained in this chapter, as Arjuna was asking Krishna about the 6 things. Kshetram means the field of activities. And Kshetrajnam means the one who experiences the activities going on in the field of activities, namely the body. Then the Prakriti is the material nature. And Purusha is the one who is trying to enjoy the matter or material nature. Prakriti and Purusha, Kshetra and Kshetrajna. Then Jnanam is the process of acquiring that knowledge by which one will become truly enlightened. And Jnayam is the truth that is worthy of knowing, beyond which there is no truth. So the 6 things are very vividly explained in this chapter. Jnanam is explained between 8 to 12 verses. Amanitvam, Adam, Vitvam, Ahimsa, Shanti, Rajam. Many qualities are given. Humility, pridelessness, Ahimsa, non-violence, Shanti, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a spiritual master. Like that, there are many things given. 20 items of knowledge are given. So that is knowledge as well as the process for acquiring knowledge. If one wants to acquire knowledge in life, one has to follow those 20 principles. And Prabhupada says, these are like 20 steps. Just like we come upstairs by climbing up this staircase. Similarly, these 20 steps are to be followed one after another. Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Kshantir, Arjavam, Acharya Pasanam, Shaucham, Stairyam, Atmanikra, Hindriyartish Vairagyam, Ahankaram Evacha, Nityam Chasamachitatam, all those qualities are to be followed. And if one follows those steps, what will one attain? One will attain the Nyayam. Nyayam means that which is knowable. What is the ultimate knowable in this world? Not what is the position of some company's share in the stock market. People have so many important things they want to know. Or the score of the cricket team. People consider that to be the most important thing to be known. But here he says that which is ultimately knowable is the soul, the super soul, and the relationship between the two. That is the ultimate knowable. There is nothing else to be known. So, this chapter, it goes into the depths of the heart of any individual. So one has to patiently learn this knowledge. What is spiritual life all about? Our spiritual life is to become free from insanity of thinking oneself to be the body or to relate with the things connected to the body as one's own. To come from this insanity of infatuation. To come to a platform where we can act in reality. That is spiritual life. Prabhupada says in one of his purports, the condition of a person in this world is like, the condition of a living entity in this world is like someone haunted by a ghost. How many of you have seen somebody haunted by a ghost? Any of you have observed a person? How many of you have seen? Only one. Only two of you. Nobody else has seen? Somebody haunted by a ghost or overtaken by some other force. You've seen that? Yeah. How they behave, isn't it? So people behave crazily. They blabber anything from the mouth, they say anything, they do strange things that others can't understand what is happening. They literally go crazy. And when they come to senses, then they behave normally with others. In the same way, Prabhupada says, the conditioned soul in this world, he thinks very high of himself in this world. Everyone thinks high of themselves. So not only thinking high of oneself, thinking wrongly about one's identity. So the soul is currently identifying with the body. This was a very interesting thing for me, because once I was sitting in the class of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj in Bombay, Srimad Bhagavatam class. So suddenly, Maharaj took my name while talking the lecture. Imagine if I immediately spell out any one of your names, will you not be shocked? Say, what is he going to say about me? You may be fearful, isn't it? So Maharaj took my name and he said, he was explaining a very similar thing in the Bhagavatam class. He was telling that how the soul becomes so foolish that he thinks himself to be somebody totally different, what he is not. So in order to explain that, he took my name and he said, imagine now Radhesham is a brahmachari in the ashram. And imagine that he assumes himself to be wife of Adikesha Prabhu. What's Mataji's name? Premlila Mataji. He said, imagine if Radhesham starts behaving like Premlila Mataji now. So he asked all the people, how will he behave? He asked. And everyone started imagining in their mind, how will it look like? So he said, imagine he starts wearing a sari and he starts speaking to Adikesha Prabhu in a certain way. Imagine if Radhesham starts doing like this with Adikesha Prabhu, what will he think? Yeah. Or he said, on the contrary, Premlila Mataji starts behaving like Radhesham Das Brahmachari. How will it be? He said, how strange it can be. He said, the living entity identifying with the body is as strange as that. He said. It is not much different, he said. It is as strange as that. He said, the soul becomes so foolish in this world in his behavior. That is why this chapter helps us to go deeper into understanding the six things which we were discussing just now. The verse which we are going to discuss today is text number 4. And this is called as a microchip verse, we call it, because there are five things in this. The whole chapter is contained in this one verse. So it will be very useful if you have a Bhagavad Gita with you to refer, because we will be referring to different sections of the chapter in order to explain this verse today. Please respond to the verse. Text number 4.
Tatkshetram yaccha yadriccha
yadvikari
yatashchatyat
sacha
yoyat prabhavascha tatsamasena meshrunu.
Now please hear my brief description of this field of activity and how it is constituted, what its changes are, whence it is produced, who that knower of the field of activities is, and what his influences are. So this appears complex, but the meaning is simple. If you see, there are five terms in this. Tat Kshetram means that field of activity, what we were discussing last time as field of activity. He says, Yatcha Yadrik. I will tell you what it is constituted of, what it consists of. That is called as Yadrik. That is the first thing Krishna is saying. I will tell you what it is made up of. So that he is explaining subsequently in text number 6 and 7. If you see, what is this field of activity is made up of? If you see 6 and 7, Mahabhutani Ahamkara, if you see, explains. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, unmanifested, the ten senses in the mind, the five sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions. All these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interactions. So that is called as a yadrik, the first one. What this field of activity consists of? And then he says, Yad Vikari. Yad Vikari means, what are the changes that happen in it? That is also explained in 7 and 20. You can see verse number 20. See the verse 20th verse explains, Pakritim Purusham Cheva Vidyanadi Ubhavati Vikaramsha Gunamshaiva Vidhi Prakriti Sambhavan. He says, material nature and the living entity should be understood to be beginningless, that transformations and the modes of matter are products of material nature. What it means is that the Atma is changeless and the material nature is also beginningless, the matter is beginningless actually. But the changes are happening only when the soul goes from one body to another. That is called as transformation. These are two things about transformation. One transformation is that the soul changes bodies, different bodies. That's one transformation. Another thing is the situation of the soul in the world puts him in sukha and dukkha, in different happiness and distress. That is also called as transformation. So he says the transformations and the modes of matter are the products of material nature. So that is called as, coming back to this verse, they are the vikari. So Krishna also explains about what is that vikari. What is changing? The soul is not changing, but his the modes in which he is situated, that is changing. The body is changing. His state of mind and his perception and his understanding, his attitude, his belief, his imagination, his assumption, which are superficial to the soul, that is changing. That is vikari. And then yatascha. There is a third word, yatascha. Whence it is produced? That means, where does it all come from? That is explained in, again, 13.6, as well as 21, 22 and 30. Yatascha is explained in 21, 22 and 30. See here, 21 is a very famous word. Karya karana kartrutve hetu prakritrucchate purusha sukadukana bhoktrutve hetrucchate. Here it says, nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, and living entity is the cause of various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. Now somebody may ask, how this living entity is put in this situation of the chetra, the field in which he is put in now, the field in which he is entangled now. How did he arrive at this situation? For that he gives reason here. How did it all start? That he says, the living entity himself is the cause of his sufferings and enjoyments in this world. And those sufferings are produced only in the material body. They are actually superfluous to the soul. They are not touching the soul. They are external to the soul. Although the soul identifies with it, so he suffers. So to the degree the soul identifies with Prakriti, to that degree the soul will suffer. Actually, we will not go into the depth of this verse. Now we are just referring to the verses. We will again discuss them in detail. And 22nd verse is called as the Mahavakya Shloka of the last 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. From 13 to 18. The most famous verse. Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhumte Prakriti Jan Guna Karanam Guna Sangosya Asajyo Nijanmasu. Here he says the living entity in the material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the 3 modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. You will see that in this verse Krishna talks about modes, which are explained in which chapter? 14th chapter and 17th chapter later. Here he is talking about Guna Sangosya. Sat Asad Yoni, that he discusses where? In the 16th chapter. And you will find divine and demoniac natures. So all that is inbuilt in this one verse. So this is 22. And then the 30th verse. Yeah. One who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and sees the self does nothing, actually sees. This also explains the answer to the question about how all this is produced, because the soul started thinking himself to be the body. So that is the third one. Fourth one is Sacha Yo, he says. That Yo means who is the knower of the field of activities? Who? Yaha means you. Who? So who is that person who knows well? That is explained in 13.14 to 18. If you see the verses 14 to 18, all those verses talk about the super soul. How the super soul never is bewildered while we are bewildered in this world. Super soul has a clear vision to see the suffering soul. Soul can be bewildered, but the super soul is never bewildered. That is explained. And also the verse 23. 14 to 18 and 23 also. That is also explaining about the Paramatma. And lastly, Yat Prabhavascha. Yat Prabhavascha means, what are his influences? If super soul is the knower of everything, what are his influences? That is also explained in the same verses, 14 to 18. Who is the super soul and what does he do? That is explained. So, there is some understanding in the 5th chapter about the soul, super soul and material nature. These 3, like a tripod, like a triangle. The soul, super soul and nature. What is the interaction between the 3? That information is given in 5th chapter. But here, it is even more deeper due to one reason. In the 5th chapter, you just know that the soul initiates actions. How? By how? By his desires. Yeah. By desiring something. The soul initiates actions. And who fulfills the desires? Super soul. Through the agency of? Material nature. So that is why this triangle. The soul desires, the super soul fulfills, and the material nature is the agency which the Lord uses to fulfill the desires of the soul. So this is what we know that. But here we learn even more deeper information. What is it? The soul who is sitting in this body is desiring many wrong things due to which he suffers. But the soul also is put in a particular type of mesh, which we call as the field of activity. So I was planning to discuss a little bit more about this field of activity. Because this field of activity, knowledge about it will help us to get free from this entanglement, which is the most dangerous thing. Now it is not enough for you to know that you are desiring wrong things due to which the material nature is fulfilling them by the order of super soul. So even if you know this knowledge, do you think it's helpful to get rid of the entanglements in the world? The mere knowledge of it. Actually, the knowledge of it can make us humble and make us understand that I am the cause of my own problems. I only have put myself in problems. That much we can understand. But many times we will not know how to get out of this entangling situation in the world. For that, one has to study this field of activities very deeply, which is explained in this chapter. The next few verses also it's explained even more deeply, like the elements are explained in vivid detail. The problem that the living entity faces in this world is owing to his own thought process. The source of all problem is the first thing that happens, the thought. Krishna says, Dhyayato Shyan Pumsaha Sangasteshu Pajayate. That begins with the contemplation and ends with the fall down. In between there are many steps. Sangat Sanjayate, Kama Kamat, Krodo Vijayate, Krodat Bhavati Sammoha. All those things are explained vividly. So first one's thought is the cause of all one's problem. But where is the thought arising from? The thought is arising from the mind, we know. There are four types of thoughts. There are positive thoughts and there are negative thoughts. Then there are necessary thoughts or routine thoughts. Then there are wasteful thoughts. So positive thoughts we all know. They are extremely powerful. Like the joy. If somebody is joyful, then you also become joyful by their association. The joy, peace, love, compassion, mercy, courtesy, kindness, helpfulness, all these things are actually positive thoughts. Selflessness, sacrifice, harmony, cooperation, wishing well to others, all this is actually what thoughts? Positive thoughts. In fact, when you have positive thoughts in your system, you also feel very nice by having them. Actually, it is not a very difficult thing to do. You try doing it. Like, you know, for example, you bless someone or you wish well for someone, they benefit and you also benefit by that. You internally know you feel very nice. Or if you have done something good, after doing that you feel very nice inside. That's the nature of positive thoughts. The negative thoughts are just opposite. They are dramatically opposite. Like, for example, revengeful attitude, anger, or stress, or attachment, or aversion, fear, all these things are negative thoughts. They all are negative thoughts. In fact, Shastras talk a lot about these four things: attachment, aversion, fear, and avarice. Avarice means envy. Attachment, aversion, fear, and envy. So these actually ought to be avoided because they are very dangerous for the individual. They can actually injure us. In fact, doctors say most of the physical diseases that we experience in our life have their counterpart in the mind. Today, modern research has proved that the mind attacks the body. Mind attacks, this is the statement made by a doctor, I am just repeating it. Mind attacks the body means if our mind is not healthy, it can also affect body terribly. Like, for example, whatever attitudes we harbor in the mind, they affect the mind as well as the body. Modern children are faced with so many psychological disorders. There are so many psychological disorders nowadays. Psychiatrists are having a great time now because of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, our bodies and minds are very, very deadly. There are innumerable problems. So many syndromes and so many phobias and so many problems. Apart from them, there are many others. So, the negative thoughts are the ones which lead to so many kinds of disasters, like even committing suicide, or somebody, the feeling of inferiority complex or depression or stress or hypertension or loneliness or boredom, martyrdom, all these things come from bad negative thinking. And thirdly, the necessary thoughts are the routine thoughts, like the thoughts about your career, thoughts about your profession, thoughts about doing your daily activities or doing your duties, fulfilling your responsibilities. They are necessary thoughts. One has to think about them. And they are productive, certainly. They have to be done. And lastly, the wasteful thoughts, again, are about the past and future. Thoughts about the past and thoughts about future. For example, thinking that, you know, oh, he or she is having it and I don't have it, and I'll feel happy if I can have it. This kind of thinking. Like sometimes people lament that, you know, I don't have a beautiful face cut. So-and-so is having it. How nice if I can have a face cut like him or her. It's a useless thought. Because you cannot cut your face. It's already cut for you. God has already cut it for you before.
Daydreaming.
Isn't it? Our thoughts about future. All the things are blaming and complaining and mourning and lamenting. All these things come in wasteful thoughts. Or sometimes, you know, making a plan to play a trick on others, or pull someone's leg, or cause some trouble to others. That is also coming in the wasteful thoughts. Simply a waste of time. People waste a lot of time. They do nothing. Like for example, sometimes I see the boys during the examination time, they don't study their book. They go all around, you know, to other boys and ask how much you have studied. They keep on asking different people. Isn't it? Yeah. And everyone does this according to their age and gender and everything. Like women are very eager to know how much ornaments others have, how much dresses they have, others have. Men are eager to know others' salaries, how much he's getting. You can see the race break. Huh? So this causes a lot of unnecessary trouble to the mind, isn't it? How are you going to gain? See, if you know that other person is earning lesser than you, you're going to feel proud. If you understand that other person is earning a lot more than you, you're going to feel envious. Either way, it is not going to be useful. Either way, you're going to face trouble. So it is unnecessary thought. These are unnecessary, wasteful thoughts. They sap our energy. Such thoughts. So, out of these four, we are supposed to take in only two thoughts, positive and necessary thoughts. Positive and the routine thoughts are productive, useful, and the negative thoughts and wasteful thoughts are to be avoided. And in order to do that, how can one do that? How can you be so selective? Can you tell your mind, my dear mind, wait a minute, I want to put a filter now. Now I will put a filter and tell you, give me only positive thoughts and routine thoughts, and negative and wasteful thoughts, you throw them out of my system. I don't want them anymore. They are troubling me. So if you tell your mind, do you think your mind is going to hear you immediately? It's not possible. It is not possible. It's not very easy. Because we are driven by our mind. You can see that we are simply driven by our minds. And the mind drives us to think many things which we do not want to think. The mind forces us to do many things that we do not want to do. You can see that. So that is the way the mind is. So it would be very interesting to know how the mind came to this situation, isn't it? Why the mind has become so bad that it drives us to do things which is not good for us, or which we do not want to do, which is not healthy for us. And we are also simply obliged to the mind. What is the reason? That is a very important question. This question is also synonymous to another question we can ask, which is also equally important question. That in order to have only the positive thoughts and routine thoughts and not have the other two, one needs willpower. One needs the will to say no to the negative thoughts and unnecessary thoughts, wasteful thoughts, throw them away, and have only them, and focus only on them. That requires tremendous willpower. And why are we not having that willpower? So these two questions are exactly the same. There is not much different. The second one and the first one. Because they have a common answer. The answer is, the scripture says, down deep in the heart of the soul, there is a great craving for pleasure. There is a great craving for happiness or bliss. Superficially we can call it as a pleasure motive. You can call it craving for the pleasure motive. In this world, everyone is chasing after getting pleasure. And you can see that it is very deep-rooted. It is not very easy. We actually call it a sense gratification, isn't it? And the aspiration and the desire for sense gratification is so intense, and it is so strong, that many people of this world feel that there is no point working against it. One feels that you forget it. Very few people try to wonder, what is this pleasure motive? Why is it subjecting me to this kind of wrong things? How can I overcome it? Very few people think about it. So we talk a lot in our Krishna conscious classes on the topic of sense gratification. Sense gratification is defined as what? Atmendriya Priti Icha Tare Bali Kaam. Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dare Prema Naam. It is said those things that we try to fulfill for our own gratification, they are called as sense gratification. That which is done to satisfy your senses only, without reference to God. You throw away God outside and then you want to enjoy what you want to do. That is sense gratification. And when you put God in the center and you do something for His pleasure, and that actually gives back pleasure to you, that pleasure is actually pure. That is spiritual in nature. That means you give pleasure to God, and then because of that you also get happiness. That is spiritual happiness. That is actually selfless in nature. So we are talking of the first one now, the selfish one. The pleasure that we want to seek selfishly. That's what we are calling as pleasure motive. So that is very deep and intense. And the majority of the people of the world have a very weak will in restraining this pleasure motive. They have very weak willpower. So why they become weak in their willpower? Because they make inadequate efforts to control the mind. Insufficient efforts to control the mind. And also the vigor to control the mind and lead a pure life is not so much there in everyone for a prolonged period of time. It may be there. Sometimes, you know, when you have a very intense association, one gets a very strong desire to control the mind, control the senses and lead a pure life and focus the mind on God. And like we, in ISKCON terms, we call it as fired up. Fired up, we call it. Fired up means just like, you know, you throw petrol, immediately the fire comes up. Similarly, a person is so ecstatic. He chants, he dances, and, you know, he is like, he's in full form. He's called fired up. So the opposite of fired up is fried out. Actually, these are called as, cliches. These are called as slangs in ISKCON terms. I don't think we'll find them anywhere in dictionary. Fired up and fried up. So our mind is tossed between fired up state and fried out state. You will see that. So, and anywhere you are in between, you have a very weak willpower. If you are in between fired up and fired up. So if you are very fired up, that time your willpower is very strong. But it is not strong always. You can see that it becomes weakened. And you can see that why it becomes weakened? Because this pleasure motive is so strong, and people try to give opportunity for this pleasure motive. What is the problem here? The problem is this. The soul is in a transcendental plane and is very pure. But now he has come from there to here, to the material plane. And now he is thinking, I am this body. And he is trying to enjoy with the body and the objects that are provided to him for each of his senses. And he is thinking that this is going to give me happiness. And he is not able to get happiness. And he doesn't know why. Why I cannot get happiness? The reason is very simple. The soul can get happiness or pleasure only where on a spiritual platform. Because he is completely pure. So, the Vedanta Sutra goes to the root of the problem. Vedanta Sutra says, This pleasure motive should not be abandoned or abolished, or one need not regret that I have this pleasure motive. One need not worry that, you know, why this pleasure motive is there, why do I have desire for sense gratification. Sometimes people curse themselves and sometimes feel pity on themselves, sometimes aspiring spiritualists, sometimes they get fed up and they lose their heart thinking that I can never make it, I can never become a pure person. But the Vedanta says, wait a minute, don't lament. The desire to seek pleasure is innate to the soul. It is an integral part of the soul and you cannot stop it. But you have to know what is the quality of pleasure that you are supposed to enjoy. So, the Vedanta Sutra says that you are supposed to enjoy a very high quality of pleasure. The highest quality of pleasure comes when the soul joins hands with God in the spiritual world, and by rendering service to Him in a loving manner, he gets the maximum pleasure. There is no bliss beyond that. That's called bliss, we call it, spiritual bliss. By loving God and serving Him, and in His company, the soul gets the maximum joy by developing relationship with God. Or in other words, by developing relationship with anybody, keeping God in the center, the soul feels the greatest pleasure. And now, having lost that state, he has come down to material state, now he's covered by the body, and he's trying to seek happiness, thinking I am this body. But the more he tries, the more he suffers. Prabhupada gave many examples for this. Like, you know, somebody got some wrong information about sugarcane. He heard how the sugarcane looks like. So he got a bamboo stick on the road, you know, started biting it. What happened to his teeth? The teeth only started breaking and it started bleeding. Similarly, our body, material body, is like that bamboo stick. And the spirit soul is like the sugarcane. So, of course, the spirit soul with Krishna can enjoy so many pleasures. In the spiritual world, the spirit soul is ever blissful because that's like sugarcane juice. But in the material world, it's like bamboo stick, biting a bamboo stick. Material body, no matter how hard you try, the material body cannot give you happiness. The Naranarayan Rishi, in their teachings, they give a very wonderful example. They say, just like a fruit which is on the tree is absorbed in water, but as soon as you put your hand in the water to pick up the fruit to relish it and enjoy it, it says immediately it melts away. The fruit melts away, what you see in reflection. In the same manner, all the pleasures of this world, in this world you will observe that when you aspire for them, when you try to enjoy them, they will melt away, he says. That means one will be cheated. And the greatest amazing thing is the soul, when he endeavors for enjoyment, when he is cheated, he gets frustrated and he works even harder, more harder to achieve it. And in this way he tries more and more in this world, in all, with all his senses, with the eyes, nose, tongue, ears and skin. With every one of his senses he is trying to enjoy this world. So, this can never be achieved on a material platform. That is why one has to know about this field of activity in which we are situated. The soul is situated in a field of activity, and the root of this material body which we are having now, which we are seeing with our eyes, the root of this material body is the subtle body. The subtle body is called as the template of the gross body. You know what is a template? Some engineers might have used templates, isn't it? Use a template. So if you have a template, just like we make this printing, what do you call it? Screen printing. They make a template for that, isn't it? So the template, if you pass ink through that, then you can get the impression. Or any drawing also, you can make a template. So the subtle body is a template for the gross body. And the subtle body follows the soul life after life after life.
Where the features are stored.
So, as long as we have the subtle body, we are going to get gross body. That is why Shankara prays in that verse, Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, punarapi janani, jatare shayanam, yasamsare kaludustare, kripayapare pahimurare. He says, oh my dear Lord, what a strange, dangerous material world it is. He is saying, how many times I have taken bodies? How many times I have died? And how many more millions of lifetimes I have to occupy the wombs of so many mothers? And every time I take on this body, He says that it is a very painful situation in the womb of the mother. And I have taken bodies again. Again there is old age, again there is disease, again there is death. And again I take another body. So the Vedas teach us to become very wise, to see through millions of lifetimes that the soul passes. Not just be foolish, like a ignorant animal who can only see the immediate pleasures. You see, a goat can only see the green grass that is fed to him in a slaughterhouse. Closing his eyes, he just eats away all the grass, and by the time he is taken to the hands of the butcher who slaughters him, isn't it? Similarly, ignorant people think only of the immediate pleasures of the world. They consider success means you have to go to America, you have to have a big job that pays you 7 lakh per annum. You have to have this, you have to have that. They think this is what people consider success. They don't know anything beyond. Goat consciousness. It's not Krishna consciousness. Goats are like that. They cannot see beyond. So although they have got a human body, they do not know what happens after death. But here we find that the soul passes from one body to another body, third body, fourth body. And this is never going to stop as long as the subtle body is present. And the subtle body, as I told you, is a template in which the real senses are present. These senses which we see, these are not the senses. Is this the ear? Do you think this is the ear? This is not the ear, it's simply covered to the ear. Do you think the drum, isn't it the drum of the eardrum, is that the real ear? No. Do you think these are the real eyes? No. These are not eyes. In fact, you can pluck out the eyes of somebody and put it in somebody else's eyes who is blind, and they will be able to see. Because this is simply an instrument. There is a seer inside this body. That is the soul, the Kshetrajna. But that seer or the soul is covered by subtle body. In the subtle body there are 5 senses, namely the seeing ability, the hearing ability, smelling ability, the tasting ability and touching ability. These 5 senses are actually present where? In the subtle body. They are in the subtle body only. So these senses, what we see in the gross body, they are simply the extensions of the senses in the subtle body. These are actually not the senses. This is simply superficial. That is why you will find that even if one closes the eyes, one can see in the eye of the mind, as we say. What is the eye of the mind? The eye of the mind is actually eye in the subtle body. The ability to see is there in the subtle body. So these 5 senses are there, these 5 abilities are there, and they are present in the subtle body. And the subtle body keeps changing forms and shapes in every life. For example, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Yam Yam Vapi Smaran Bhavam Kajatyante Kalevaram Tam Tame Vaiti Kaunteya Sadatat Bhava Bhavita. In whatever way we mold our life, accordingly the subtle body changes its shape. And then at the time of death, when we die, that subtle body becomes a template for the next body. Like I saw one interesting picture of a man who was carrying a dog. So the dog's face and the man's face were exactly similar. They had put a picture. So what the artist was trying to portray, this man was developing so much attachment for this dog that is practically becoming, is looking like the dog gradually. He's developing the dog's consciousness. They're trying to say that. In this world, we all have to develop attachment to someone or something. You can never say that I'll be detached. You cannot become desireless or you cannot become detached. Soul has a desire to become attached and possess something. Even in the spiritual platform, the soul possesses Krishna. Krishna is mine and I am Krishna's. This is the consciousness of the soul. The soul always thinks like this: Krishna is mine and I am Krishna's property. So one cannot avoid possessing or avoid becoming attached. You only have a choice between what to become attached to material or spiritual. So whatever input we give to the subtle body, that input decides how the subtle body is going to transform into future. So one has to prepare the subtle body in such a way that the subtle body becomes completely purified. There is a verse in the third canto of Bhagavatam says, Jarayatyashya kosham nigirna manalo yatha. He says, Kapila says, One has to burn away the subtle body of all the impurities, subtle body, by feeding that Krishna consciousness, the spiritual consciousness. That's why, actually there are many jnanis and yogis who go to the jungles and they go into the deep woods to completely keep away from all the sense objects of this world, so that they can refrain from seeing, from smelling, from hearing, from tasting and touching. They do pratyahara, prati-ahara, which means don't give any ahara to the senses, to the five senses. Completely avoid the ahara, food to the five. Food is not only to the mouth, food is also the food for the eyes, food for the ears, food for the nose, whatever they give. Why they do that? The reason is they want to, prati-ahara means they want to avoid all the bad input to the senses, so that they can go into the deep woods and they can purify the subtle body, so that they can gradually give up the subtle body and the soul can get liberated and attain the ultimate destination. But that is not an easy thing, because Brahmaji says to Priyavrata that even if you go into forest, your six wives will follow you, he says. The six wives, who are the six wives? The five senses in the mind. Now the five senses in the mind, what is the meaning of they following him? You may say that I have taken away my five senses away from the enjoyments of the world. But still, even if you close your eyes, close your ears, close your nose and mouth and everything, still one is faced with innumerable dreams and innumerable sense objects that come in one's mental screen. One can see them. Where are they coming from? They are coming from the subconscious mind. So we have a conscious mind and we also have a subconscious mind. So there are things that happen consciously which we see, and later on they get loaded into the subconscious mind. They go deep and they remain. And subconscious mind, it has so many things, my God, if you open it up, there is so much to know that. Just like in your house, imagine that you have a room for a godown. Say you made one room into a godown. And you have been putting everything there. Whenever you wanted to, you know, throw away all the dirt and everything, you clean up the other rooms, and you open this door, throw it and close the door immediately. Some people do that in certain homes. Because that is one room where you can throw away everything that you don't want. And you have been throwing like that. And one day you decided that let me clean this room. Because you know, practically for the past 30 years, I have never opened this room. Sometimes when people have too many rooms in their house, they do that sometimes. So one day you decide, and then you slowly open the door, you start seeing cockroaches flying outside, and all this, and millipedes will come out, snakes will come out, and you will be jumping up and down, what is this? There is so much dirt, so much dust. So our subconscious mind is like that, go down. There are so many dirty things. So this subconscious mind is ruled by many things. For example, the false ego primarily. The false ego makes us think I and mind. I and mind, ahankar. Then past life conditionings, which we say. What is past life conditioning? Past life, just like air conditioning means this room is now in a certain temperature, you can condition the air in this room down to a certain temperature. Or you can elevate the temperature, whatever. You condition it so that the temperature of this room will be different from outside, isn't it? Similarly, past life conditioning means you are a normal person, but based on whatever bad things you did in the past, which have gone into your subconscious mind, those tendencies erupt from the heart and they come to the conscious state. And then they make you do things which you may not want to do. That is what we call as past life conditionings. Sometimes you see a person is very good. He is like, looking like a gentleman, normal person. Suddenly he does something which he himself is shocked how he did it. So such behavior is owing to past life conditionings, which is very dangerous. Sometimes one may not even know that such tendencies are hidden in the heart. That's like I was telling you. Sometimes even if you don't open the godown, some millipede is coming out, isn't it? Even if you don't open it, because the room has been dumped for a long time with many things. Then there is also upbringing in one's family. Like in the childhood, everyone has been brought up in various ways. Sometimes the child gets to see quarrel between senior members of the family. Sometimes the child is not given love, or sometimes the child is taunted for every small thing. So these are all the things form very deep impressions in the mind of the child. Or sometimes the child is bereft of love because the mother and father go away to office, and child is brought up by some servant maid who never fed the child properly, who never gave love or whatever. So these are also fed. And also child sometimes learns bad habits. Some mothers, what they do, when the child is troubling them, crying, immediately they sit on the TV. And now the child is looking at the television, then she goes to the kitchen. Now I am happy now. But the child will be watching TV for 3-4 hours and he won't trouble me. But he is going to trouble you later, when he grows up. Because all this is going into the system now, into the ears and eyes and everything. It will go into the system and later on it will bring out the demon in him. And that will be a much bigger demon. That's more difficult to control. So, when you don't take out time to groom up the children at the right age, then we should be ready for facing future disaster. So, this is upbringing. All of us are brought up in a certain way, in a certain family. Different kinds of environment our parents gave us. So we have been grown up in that. Or in the school also. That is why the another fourth point is the association. What type of association we get. The friend circle that we get, and the families that we visit, the kind of people with whom we relate with, all those. That kind of association makes a very big impact in our consciousness. Especially in the formative years, in the growing years. So our personality is shaped in a certain way by the time you become an adult, you attain adolescent age. By adolescent age you can say that, you know, these are my principles, I believe in these things, I don't believe in that, these I consider superstition, this I consider to be true, I live by these principles. We all can say that by when you come to the adolescent age. And how do you say all that? It's all based on these things. It's all based on past life conditioning, on association, on upbringing, and our false ego and all these things. And all these are actually in the subconscious mind stored. So, the way by which one can overcome the problems of the subconscious mind, which actually drive our mind to do wrong things, is only by the willpower, which I was telling you. And Shastras are talking about that willpower a lot. You will see in Bhagavad Gita, for example, Raga Dvesha Vimuktaistu Vishayan Indriyascharan Atma Vashyair Vidheyatma Prasadam Adigacchati. Krishna says that. Raga Dvesha Vimuktaistu, my dear Arjuna, strenuously endeavor to give up your attachments and aversions. What type of attachment and aversions? Attachment to wrong things and aversion for the right things. For example, we have attachment to many wrong things. For example, we are lazy. Laziness is one type of bad habit to which many people are attached to. Like I was telling last time, isn't it? Like when you get up in the morning, you again lie down. You think that now, just 10 minutes more. And the 10 minutes becomes 2 hours afterwards. That's a bad habit. So these are attachments, wrong habits. Or sometimes uncleanliness, untidiness. It's a bad habit. So we have attachment to such things. Also we have attachment to old friends whom we like very much, but those who are not ready to become Krishna conscious, we like them very much and we are unable to give them up. That is also attachment. So these are attachment to wrong things and aversion for the right things. For example, chanting Hare Krishna is the right thing to do. But sometimes one may feel, oh, it's such a great strain. Alas, when will this mala end? When will finished? I have finished my today's round successfully. Some people feel I deserve a prize today now. I have completed my rounds. As if, you know, you have established a flag on the Mount Everest. And things like that. So we have aversion for the right things. Like for example, we are supposed to eat sattvic ahar. Sattvic means, you know, prasadam is a mode of goodness. But mind likes things with passion and ignorance. So we can say many things that are good for us, but we have aversion to do them. Somebody can say example for aversion for the right thing? Any example, anybody? He's saying reading Prabhupada's books. He's saying that's the right thing to do, but our mind is averse to that. You take the book immediately, mind, you go to sleep immediately. Or you never take the book. Isn't it? Even if you take the book, the mind puts you off. So, aversion for the right thing. So, raga, dvesha, what is it? Vimuktaistu. Give up the attachment to wrong things and aversion for the right thing. Vishyan, indriyascharan. Indriyascharan. The roaming senses which focus on sense objects and which bring trouble to you. Krishna says, give it up by doing this. And then he says, atma vashyer vidheya atma. By following a regulated lifestyle, one can achieve. Here is the solution, key, Krishna gives. See, Bhagavad Gita, one word, you know, you could contemplate for years. What is this regulation? See, the Vedas are so great that they are like a mother for all the souls. Why they are like a mother? Because the Vedas say, you want to enjoy the body? No problem. Enjoy the body in such a way that you will reserve some of your energies to enjoy the pleasures of the mind also. Don't only enjoy the body. Keep some energy reserved for enjoying the pleasures of mind. Somebody says, no, I don't want to enjoy my body. I like pleasures of the mind more. Then the Vedas say, okay, you want to enjoy the pleasures of the mind? Enjoy the pleasures of the mind in such a way that you'll reserve some of your energy for enjoying the bliss of the soul. You reserve some of your energy for that. That's how they say. Vedas never say no to anybody. Vedas accommodate everyone. They are like supermarket. You get everything in Vedas. There's nothing that is not there. So even if one wants to enjoy the body, the Vedas say, hey, go through this route. If you do this, you can enjoy. But along with it, the Vedas are also concerned about giving the benefit of, you know, pleasure of the soul to the individual. So, that is the way the instructions are given in the Vedas. So what is that instruction? Regulated lifestyle. So if one regulates the pleasure-seeking nature, then gradually the tendency to enjoy the pleasures of the world will be minimized and our eagerness for attaining the spiritual world will increase. And how it should be done? Two things have to be done. On one hand, enjoy the pleasures in a regulated way, and secondly, even while enjoying them, be in the consciousness that material pleasures are poisonous. In this consciousness, one should enjoy them. Remembering this famous verse, please repeat this verse. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyantavantah kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. See, nateshu ramate buddha. Intelligent people, my dear Arjun, do not enjoy in the pleasures of this material world because these are all giving paltry amount of pleasure. Insignificant. Because if you see, the physical pleasure we get, say you put a gulab jamun in the tongue, how long it lasts? It goes down the throat, finished. As long as it is in the tongue, it lasts. When gulab jamun goes down the throat, is it pleasure anymore? Finished. So how many moments? A few moments only. That is sensual pleasures. And all the sensual pleasures are like that. They give a very, very short duration happiness. Then, mental pressure. Say you like some cinema song, you are singing for some time, and after maybe a month or two, you will want to, you know, go to another song now. You know, you want a new song. Now the old songs are gone. So you want new songs like that. So the mind wants variety, after some time. So mental pressures also don't last. And you can see intellectual pressure, egoistic pressure, if you go higher and higher, so the duration of the pleasure you experience, that actually increases as you go from the senses to the mind to the intellect and the ego. Egoistic pleasure means, for example, if say Prime Minister of India gives you a Padma Bhushan award that you have done something wonderful, isn't it? Like our Rasagiri Prabhu got the best teacher award, isn't it? In whole of India. So it's a great thing. Or you are the first one to, you know, put the flag in the Mount Everest. Say if you have done it. So nobody has done it and you are the only one who has done it. So that will give a tremendous pleasure which will last through the entire life. No. Till the last breath you take, it will last. After you die, you will forget who you were in the previous life. And you have to remember who you were in the previous life and what successes you achieved in previous life. You must have been one of the best cricketers. Or you must have been, you must have achieved a gold medal in the Olympics. But you may not even remember now. Because the egoistic pressure also lasts only till one lifetime only, isn't it? But the spiritual pressure, Ramante Yogino Anante, Satyananda Chidatman. It is Satyananda and it is also Ananta. It is a true pleasure is on the soul's platform and it is Ananta and it is unending. So Krishna says, Natesha Ramate Buddha, intelligent people, my dear Arjuna, they never even endeavor to enjoy the pleasures of the world. He says, they don't endeavor because they know very well that the pleasures of this material world are very short-lived. You see, that is the way the world is created. Like somebody gives you a birthday gift, you know, a big box. How do you feel when you see that? Nicely packed in a cover with a beautiful ribbon. There's so much eagerness. I want to see what is the gift, you know. Immediately want to, you open the ribbon, you open the cover and everything and you see, say they have given a quartz clock to you. So, see the clock, like the, okay, clock and then it goes to a corner. You know? You throw it in the corner after that. And do you ever see it afterwards? No, you are no more interested. That is the material pleasure in this world. It's very short-lived. No. But just imagine, before seeing that, how did you feel? You thought that I am going to get happiness that is everlasting. Was it everlasting? No. Same thing, sometimes we want to go to some new place. Like somebody is going to, you know, go for some tour or some picnic to Shimla. So they are thinking, oh, I will go to Himalayas, I will wander in the snow-capped mountains. You know, you imagine so many things. And after you go there, it is cutting cold, you know. And you are asking your friends, you know, when are you returning now? You know, you are going there. It's a very short-lived pleasure. Yeah. And in the same way, just like before marriage, people think marriage is a very... generally people see, when a man and woman see one another, they think that the pleasure the mind promises you is infinite. But what it offers you is 0.00001 quantity. Yeah. The promise given is very great by the mind. Mind is very terrible in this way. Like, you know, somebody is in the desert, thirsty for water. He's about to die, the throat is running dry, he feels the next moment I'm going to die, please somebody give water. And he finds a big helicopter with a big cloth written, you know, fresh, cool, drinking water. The helicopter goes round and round on his head and you see, his head is also going. And then at last it lands down. And he's thinking that, you know, they have brought, you know, hundreds and thousands of bottles of water for me. I want to drink all of them. See, that is the nature of the soul because the soul wants unlimited pleasure. So he thinks, I will drink 1,000 bottles now, he thinks. And then he's asking the person, bring it quickly. He's pounding the door. And the fellow is opening the door and coming. Come here, down, he says. And then show your hand. And then he's brought a Bisleri bottle, which has only one drop of water. And he puts it in the hand. And this fellow drinks. And he thinks, you know, it's better you should not have given this to me. Because after drinking that one drop, now you have increased my thirst even further. So this is the material pleasure in this world. It increases your thirst more. Actually, it increases your, not the thirst more, the craving more. It increases the craving. It cannot satisfy. Our senses are all very blunt and they don't have ability to satisfy. They cannot satisfy you. How much, like, you know, even if you are the richest man, how much can you eat? Or how long can you eat? Before eating, like, you know, in our temple once, when I was in Bombay, you know, we did this Pandavan Vijayala Ekadashi, you know. The next day, early morning, you know, before Mangalarti only, many brahmacharis, they kept three bottles full of ginger water ready, you know, in the lockers. They closed and kept. They thought as soon as the, you know, that Parana time comes, we'll finish all the three bottles. Because they thought that, no, even if we drink two bottles, that won't be enough. I may probably die. Better have a third one. So they had all the bottles ready. So as soon as the time came, everyone rushed to the ashram. They opened their, you know, locker. They took the bottle. By then, they finished half the bottle. They were full. Now they started becoming more charitable, calling everyone. Anybody wants more? Started giving everyone. So our senses are really incapable of giving us satisfaction. So if we are going to be foolish and always struggling to enjoy with the blunt material senses, then we will be simply like that foolish animal which Bhagavatam explains, that he was looking for water but he couldn't find water because out on the top of the water there was green grass that was grown. The whole pond was full of green grass. So the foolish animal could not see the water beneath the green grass. So he saw the grass like this and then he started running all around searching for water. He didn't know that below the grass there was water. Similarly, upon the soul, this material body has grown, which is like the grass. But we are looking at the body and thinking, where is the pleasure in this body? And we are trying to get, the deer was trying to eat the grass and quench his thirst. Can he? He couldn't. He needs water. And the water is beneath the grass. Similarly, the real pleasure is in the soul, which is inside this material body. And as long as the soul is trying to enjoy the pleasures of the body, he will not be given entrance to enjoy the pleasure of the soul. He is deprived of that opportunity. Yeah. That is why the sense gratification and Krishna consciousness, they go heal together. It is there. So people often think, you know, the sense gratificatory route is a shorter route. You know, it seems that material pleasures can give me quick enjoyment, but spiritual pleasure seems to be too far away, you know. Who will wait till then, you know? Better, you know, whatever is available immediately take advantage, they think. But then it's foolishness, because if one takes advantage of the sense gratificatory pleasures kept in the body, you cannot get the higher taste. You cannot get the higher pleasures. Just like Sanatana Goswami told that person, no? You throw away the parsimony, then only I'll give you a treasure which is more valuable, he said. Actually, Krishna says, Nateshu Ramate Buddha, says. So, one has to, even while enjoying regulated pleasures, there are regulations given. You can eat delicious items, but you should eat only prasadam. And similarly, one is allowed to indulge in sex within family life. Dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarishabha. But there is regulation given. So, while eating, or while indulging in the worldly activities, doing the activities, one should do them in a regulated way. But while doing them in a regulated way, also, in the mind, in the background of our consciousness, we should think, Nateshu Ramate Buddha. Intelligent people will not delight in material sense gratification. But I am doing this regulation, why? In order to bring about control of my mind and senses. For example, when we try to give up sweets, it's almost an impossibility. Eating sweet. Maximum we can give up for 1 or 2 weeks. And then again, the desire to eat sweets becomes very strong and pronounced. So have a regulated enjoyment. Okay, every time you eat a little bit of sweet, not much. Take, you know, then sometimes they measure and give. You know, sometimes they give a small, what do you call it, the cup kind of thing. You know? And that they give sweet rice to everyone, isn't it? In Yatra they give, isn't it? Yeah. So you are supposed to be satisfied with that. Not, you know, go behind the kitchen and find out whether you can get more. Everyone is supposed to be satisfied. That is regulated enjoyment. So you cannot give up at the same time. So that is why ascetic denial or indulgence, both are not options for a common man. Ascetic denial means how many people can be ascetics? Totally deny the pleasures of the world. On the other hand, if one indulges in them, then one simply becomes foolish. One can never attain spiritual pleasures. So the solution is regulation. So here we are studying about the field of activity. Our field of activity, amongst all the things in the field of activity, the mind is the most important thing. The mind, the most prominent component of the subtle body, has brought us to the current situation in which we are in. Right now in our state, if you sit calmly in a room, close your eyes and think deeply, what is your personality? What kind of person are you? What are the activities you have been doing till now? And what are the secret desires that your mind is harboring to do in the future? If you write them down in a paper and think deeply, you will see that all these things are simply a composite of your thoughts. Thoughts turn into words, the words turn into action, the action becomes habit, habit forms character, the character forms culture, and the culture in which you are living now, that has begun from a thought, originally. So that is why it is said the vichar should be very pure. So Krishna Kanya movement is such a wonderful movement, it gives us opportunity to refine our thoughts. Refine our thoughts from the bad quality thoughts to pure quality thoughts. Like we are always taught, be in the mood of a servant, not in the mood of a master. We are always taught, Krishna is the enjoyer, we are only his servant. Always bow down, always serve. There are a million ways to remember Krishna that are taught in the moment. How to keep ourselves Krishna conscious morning to night. There are so many activities. It is so involving and so engaging. It is said about the gopis did not even want to blink their eyes when they were beholding the beauty of the Lord. And when they were seeing Krishna like that, they had totally forgotten their identity. They had totally forgotten their belongings and their possessions and their designations and positions in the material world completely. They only could see Krishna Balaram or Radha and Krishna. The gopis were in their consciousness that they had totally become oblivious to the things of the world. So that consciousness is considered the topmost consciousness, where one forgets that ahankar. Ahankar means I am also somebody, I am also something, someone who can show that I can do something in the world. Some people say, I will do something and show. Some people want to, that is ahankar actually. So one has to give up that ahankar. And also we think about mamakar also, the things that belong to us. So when we do our bhakti, we can see that we are doing bhakti, but we have not forgotten our material identity. You all know what is Bhuta Shuddhi prayer, you know. I will conclude with that. Bhuta Shuddhi prayer is a prayer that a pujari is supposed to offer before entering into the deity room, before entering into the altar and performing service. Our mind is such a low class mind that it always perceives things materially. Like for example, if you look at the deity, the mind may think the deities are made of stone or wood. The mind may think like that. Normally, anybody's normal mind. It is like a donkey that sees a currency note and thinks, here is a nice food for me to eat. And he cannot think of the currency note to be any better than a paper for eating. So this donkey's consciousness. So, but if one is a wise man, when he sees the currency note, he knows how valuable it is. The donkey is eating the currency note, but if you take the currency note, you can give him the room fulls of paper to eat with that currency note, isn't it? Similarly, when we look at the deity in our material consciousness, we may not be able to see it spiritually. So before entering into the deity room, we do a Bhuta Shuddhi prayer. The prayer goes like this. Oh my dear Lord, I am a pure spiritual who is your servant in the spiritual world. But somehow or other, I completely forgot you. And owing to my envious nature, I gave up your company and I come to the material world. And wandering in this material world, I have been literally burnt by the miseries of the material world. I have been struggling life after life, millions of lifetimes. Sandahyamana sarvanga yesham udvahanadina. Sandahyamana, dahyamana means the soul is literally burnt in this world by the samsara dava nalalida loka, we sing, no? Like that. At last, by some unimaginable good fortune, I have come across your pure devotee who picked me up from this world and put me at your feet and engaged me in your divine service. And please help me to always remember that I am a pure soul apart from the gross and subtle coverings. I am a pure spirit soul. And I have nothing to give and take with this dirty material world. Prabhupada was telling once, the material world is so horrible. There are many things that one may not want to do, but the mind forces one to do. And after having done it, one regrets in this material world. Like we don't want to become angry, we don't want to become lusty, we don't want to become greedy. But our senses and mind, they engage us in these things and we lament afterwards. So once when Prabhupada was walking, he saw a big truck was going and something was written in some other language. And Prabhupada asked, what is written there? And one disciple said, Prabhupada has written, put the garbage into this, you know, back side of that lorry. And Prabhupada said, take the whole material world and put it into that, Prabhupada said. That is what this material world is fit for, Prabhupada said. Such a dirty material world. So, in Bhuta Shuddhi prayer, we pray that, my dear Krishna, let me always remember that I am a pure soul apart from the gross and subtle coverings. And I am simply your servant and I have no other designation. Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tatparatvera nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. So, when we cannot give up our designations like that, then we are allowed to continue with some of the material designations but live a regulated life while sincerely regretting that the material pressures are temporary and someday I have to give them up and beg to Krishna for higher taste in his service. So this is actually the sum and substance of gaining control over the mind and achieving willpower. The secret lies here. And the regulated Krishna conscious lifestyle which is practiced with utmost sincerity, with a sincere regret in the heart for one's inability to completely surrender. Like at the moment we are not pure devotees, we cannot completely surrender. So we are given a program that we chant 16 rounds of Mahamantra and we follow 4 regulative principles and lead a regulated lifestyle. So one should always regret that I am not able to do much, I am able to only do this much. You see, Ambarish Maharaj in his retired stage, he wanted to do more and more service. After retirement, he wanted to do more service. Very amazing to see Ambarish, isn't it? Ambarish was protected by the Sudarshan Chakra. He was given such an opportunity by the Lord. Lord himself spoke about him. Such a pure devotee, he says that I want to do more. So, if one is in this consciousness, then very soon one can get. In this chapter also, Krishna at the end will say that, my dear Arjuna, my devotees don't have to worry so much. My devotees, those are sincere devotees, not anybody. You should not think all of us. You have to be more sincere. Krishna is saying, those who are such sincere devotees, for them, without having to understand the complicated mind, the indriya, the tanmatra, the 24 material elements, which are vividly explained in Sankhya philosophy, my devotee need not have to break his head in understanding all these things in great detail in order to get free from the mesh or entanglement of material world. But my devotion service, my devotee will be very easily achieving my lotus feet. Krishna says that. At the same time, why we are understanding this? Because our minds are very complicated. Prabhupada used to say, Krishna conscious philosophy is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. So for somebody who has simplicity like the South Indian Brahmin, so it's very easy. By devotion service, by refraining from everything of this world, he can achieve Krishna very easily. But we are understanding because we are living in the atmosphere where we are bombarded with onslaught of such gross dirt all around us. Not only pollution, we are talking about the gross dirt for the eyes, for the ears, for the nose, for the tongue and the skin. The kind of pollution to the mind pollution. There is so much mind pollution taking place in Kali Yuga. So by understanding these things, one can safeguard the input to the mind. So you have to safeguard the input to the mind. Or if you cannot safeguard the input to mind, then you have to be like the stomach. What does the stomach do? The stomach, it takes the good ingredients and sends it to the heart, and then the blood, is pumped to all parts of the body. And the waste food, what is done? That is thrown out. It is excreted out of the system. Similarly, we are giving so much input from the outside world into our mind. So the mind should ruminate on them, and as soon as some of them are dirty, you throw them out of the mind. And good things, you take it into your system. So, Krishna consciousness is such a wonderful thing. Once Radhana Swami was telling a boy, that boy said, Maharaj, how can I give up bad association? Maharaj said a very simple answer. By being in good association, he said. And this boy said, Maharaj, how can your answer be so simple? I am struggling hard to give up bad association. Maharaj said, yes. Like right now, all of you, you have escaped the bad association of going to a movie. How? By being at Jayadeva Prabhu's Satyadharma's place here. Isn't it? Because you can't be at two places like Krishna can, Krishna can be here also and he can be in movie also, isn't it? You can't be. At least that one good thing we have. If you are in one place, you can't be in two places. Isn't it? So, by being in good association, we can give up bad association. Then we are protected. Hare Krishna. I can take one question? Ask Krishna.
In the pleasure hunt which is there, in the search for pleasure, you are speaking about two, three things. Like one is, one can overcome it by driving away ignorance, by getting knowledge. Another thing you are saying is about, the thoughts, like stopping the thought, the thought only is sitting there.
Stopping thought also has to do with the food we eat. That's why it's saying with prasad. Yeah.
All kinds of input. The third thing which is there is conditioning. Now at least, as I have seen, like most of the times in devotees' life, the struggle against the pleasure hunt is because of conditioning. Like for example, if you see, the highest pleasure is sex life. Everybody has heard, we have all heard so much about, and people have experienced this. It's not just that 0.001. And also thoughts, even devotees, like, nobody, devotees who have faced problems, not that they are voluntarily taking in some thoughts in some movie or something like that. The main thing what happens is because of a lot of conditioning, so somebody has enjoyed for so many years in the past. So what happens is, after they come to Krishna consciousness, okay, now they are standing their rounds, now they are trying to get pleasure from Krishna. But always one doesn't get that pleasure from Krishna.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is that, like a sine wave, you know, at
yeah.
some point of time there is a down in consciousness. Yeah. So at that time what happens is because of this past conditioning of, you know, enjoying sex life, which is very easily available. You know, but at that time, you know, kind of without, not that he has taken any new thought, but there are millions of thoughts already in place.
Mm.
So that time, a devotee like kind of falls down to that. And when you talk about regulation again, you see, this is one thing where there is hardly any regulation. Basically, one has to give it up. Except for children and all the sex. Nothing. One has to give it up. So, can you tell something about how does one especially, you know, fight against conditioning in the pleasure field? Because always one is not getting positive pleasure from Krishna's feet or, you know, from Krishna's name or something that one can always offset. Many times we can, but suddenly sometimes, you know, that comes up and then the force one is
That is why one has to keep the fire moment after moment. This you can understand when you associate with great souls. Like I was with Chandramali Swami, you know, in his room. I spent a lot of time talking to him, asking questions and meeting personally. So we can see such great personalities, how they spend their day from morning to night. We can observe closely, if you observe, for example, he is carrying a Narsingadev Shila, you know, Narsingadev deity he has, a small box, you know, he's put a rubber band around it, you know. And he has a small vessel for offering water to Narsingadev, you know, inside that only. So he, wherever he goes, he opens it, he sets it up, and then he offers water in that small, you know. And then later on, while leaving, he drinks that water, you know. And then again, he puts it back and he carries. Like I have seen other Maharajas also. Many Maharajas carry deities with them, you know, wherever they go. I used to think, you know, why they take so much trouble, you know, carrying so many, you know, shilas and so many, like, Gaurnitai and so many deity carrying, you know, it's so much weight also, and you have to preserve them very carefully, you should not lose them somewhere. And you have to set up also, setting up the altar takes so much time, and you have to do puja also for them, you know. So they are not foolish to do all these things, because they know that the mind is very devilish in nature. The mind is like a monkey. The example is given, like a monkey was given free wine to drink by somebody. Already he was jumping. And when he was given free wine, he started jumping even more. And a scorpion stung his leg, that even made him jump even more. Similarly, in this world, Maya Devi supplies, you know, free opportunities to know different things for your senses. She freely supplies the wine of that hankering for material enjoyment. Maya Devi supplies that. So when people allow the mind to wander here and there innocently, they are like innocent people. All of us are like innocent children. We come in the world of Maya and we don't know how to, you know, keep the mind in control. We allow the mind to wander in wrong places, you know. Sometimes, like a cow is wandering in the wrong place where a tiger can come and eat her, you know. Similarly, we also allow our mind to wander in wrong places. And adding to that, we become attached to... See, the first is attraction, and the latest thing that comes is the attachment. Begins with attraction and then attachment. Like for a rat is watching, you know, trap, where he sees some coconut is hanging or something. So he's feeling attracted to the coconut. And after he goes and eats the coconut, the back there closes. You know. That is finished. That is attached stage. And he's finished now. You know? So in the same manner, we can see the great souls are very intelligent in preserving their consciousness. So the greatest wealth in this whole creation is divine consciousness. To preserve it. So we have to preserve it moment after moment. Generally what we do, we come to temple, we come to association, we chant, dance here, and sometimes we feel very elevated, very exalted, we tell, you know, Aaj ki anand ki jai, some people say, you know, Aaj itna anand mila, you know, in many satsangs people say that, you have seen, Aaj ki anand ki jai. So that remains only one day's anand, you know. And then when they go back, again they go back to the routine of the world, and they fail to protect the mind. Because of which what happens? fall down never happens suddenly. It happens actually gradually. Like, you know, once Maharaj was telling, you know, that how he said Maya Devi asks only for one moment. She will not ask for 1 year, 1 month, you know. He was telling, no? She asks only one moment. So this is one solution, that we can always work on moment after moment consciousness, to keep ourselves fired up always. How can we do that? By finding out morning to night what kind of engagement we have. You know? Like sometimes you are too busy, other times you are too free. Being too free is very dangerous for the mind. Like sometimes you are sitting, now you think, you know, what to do, I don't have anything to do, you are looking at the sky. It's a very dangerous situation. The idle man's brain is a devil's workshop, yeah. Then the demon will enter into the head and ask us to do wrong things. So one should have such engagement, you know. It's better that, you know, we burn out the body in Krishna's service and go back to Godhead, than to keep some idle time to allow the mind to indulge in wrong habits, which will, you know, keep us, you know, firmly, you know, like a secure prison in the material world. So it's better to little bit exert ourselves more, more than what we can do. And you can always see all the great souls, if you see, they all have worked very hard in their early days. Although they may tell us, please take rest, you know, they will tell us. But you ask them whether they took rest, they didn't take rest. You see that they have worked very hard, yeah. So it's better that we always exert a bit more than our normal performance, you know, so that we are 24 hours engaged in Krishna service. So moment after moment we are Krishna conscious. Like for example, I tell brahmacharis also, like some brahmacharis don't have any programs. I tell them, hey, take up a program. It's a trick in one sense. How? If you tell him to take a program, he will be forced to read. If you tell him, please read Prabhupada's books, he will always be escaping. Prabhuji, you know, I had to do that, Prabhuji, I had to do this. And he will give 100 reasons why he cannot read. Now you tell him, take up a program. So he takes a program and he has to study. Otherwise he will be saying blah blah in the program. He cannot speak anything. So now then he is engaged in studying and engaged in going for the program. Like for example, myself, now this entire evening you all have saved me from Maya by being with all of you, because I am engaged in Krishna service. In this way we can try to mold our entire life moment after moment in Krishna service. We have to see which are the moments I'm engaged in Krishna service. That's one thing. Another thing is, I feel that when we cool down in spiritual life, you know, when you go down, we have to always intelligently seek the association of great souls. That makes a very big difference. This time when Chandramali Swami came, I was telling him that Maharaj, 1 week you stayed in Pune and all of our devotees, their spirits went very high. Then I was telling. So he said, no, you think your spirits went high, but actually my spirits went much higher, he said, because I came and I was with all of you. So he said, preaching to others means I am also hearing what I am saying to you now, you know. So here is a soul in the body which is hearing everything what he is saying. So he said, preaching to others and telling them to do the right things will also invariably will force us to also do the right thing. You will see that. So by preaching and by associating with great souls, by both these things we get that fired up consciousness, to remain always fired up. Thirdly, we should not give any type of circumstance or opportunity for the wrong things to happen. This is called as titillation. I was talking about it in one of the previous classes, if you all remember. Remember I was telling you that one devotee, you know, was given some palm full of that kurumara, you know, puffed rice. You remember that? Like in the ashram, that night about 9:30, 10 o'clock, one devotee came and gave another devotee, Prabhu, please have a little bit of puffed rice. You know, it was puffed rice, you know. You know, it was fried with yellow color, they put jeera, they had put some that special type of mirchi, which is crispy mirchi, you know. They had put all that and, you know, lal mirchi they had put. So it was like, you know, hot also and tasty also. You know, you'll get tears in your eyes, you know, but still you like it, you know. And you like. So this devotee got that palm full. So he told the other devotee, no, Prabhuji, I don't want you. The other devotee said, no, Prabhuji, at least one palm you should take. So this devotee took it and he put it in the mouth. It was so crispy. It was like, you know, eating it. So delicious, you know. Then without any shame he asked him, Prabhuji, can I have one more palm? And the devotee gave second time also. Then the devotee, what he did, he went to his locker, he opened the locker, took out his plate. And he brought the plate to the devotee and he kept the plate behind him. Prabhuji, where are you getting from, you know, that kurumara, you know, where are you getting from? And that devotee said, Prabhuji, you don't know, in our ashram, in the corner, there's a sack, you know, and it's in the corner, you can go and take. Then this devotee went there, and he opened the sack, and this much, you know, plate full like a mountain. He was eating till 11:30, you know. Next day morning, he had a severe stomachache, because he ate so much. So he could not control his mouth. So what he learned from this example, this is called as titillation. Titillation means, first mistake he did was to agree to eat that palm fruit. That was the mistake he did. This is the meaning of titillating the senses. It's not only with respect to tongue, with respect to every one of our senses. For example, the chastity of the eyes is not to see bad things. But eyes are craving to see impure things. So you see them, it's very difficult to take off your eyes. But you somehow, you don't see them, you restrain yourself and pray to Krishna. Your determination will go one step higher. Your willpower is increased. When you do the right things, you know, you are investing in your integrity bank account. You know? So you become, your willpower increases more by that. And when you do the wrong thing, you go one step down. Your will becomes weakened by that. So the titillation we should not do with the eyes or the ears or the nose or the tongue or the skin. The titillation is what is the beginning step in any fall down. Jayato Vishan Punsa Krishna says that is titillation actually. Indriyana hi charatam yanmanon vidiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayur namam vivam pasi Krishna says. As a boat is swept away by the wind, similarly, even if the mind focuses on one of the roaming senses, then the mind is swept away, he says. And actually, you know, to fight with the mind is not an easy joke. You know, or control the senses is not an easy joke. But the easiest thing to conquer the mind and senses is to engage in devotional service. That is a positive engagement. And one should have abundant engagement, more than what one can do. Sometimes I give devotees 10 or 20 things to do. Sometimes they cry, Prabhuji, you know, you don't have any mercy on me, you have given so much to do. You know. I tell them, no, it is only because of mercy on you, I have given you so much. Keep these things with you, do as much as you can. And within the stipulated time, do as much as you can. Because, you know, you will always have something to do in life, with respect to Krishna consciousness. It's never that, you know, that now I'm done with everything, now I don't know what to do next, you know. You're not staring at the sky, you know. You have something to do always. So these steps may help, I think. And another thing is, when you keep on saying no to the wrong things and keep saying yes to the right things, for a period of time, you become oblivious to the wrong things. You're not there with them anymore. You're always with the right things. So, I have seen the sannyasis who travel from place to place. They have a very high consciousness, and the way they keep themselves busy and engaged. Chandramani Swami did four programs a day when he was in Pune. That's 1 week. You can see that, you know, in the night when he would come back, you know, in the car only he will go to sleep, you know. And then he would get up, and when he would go to the room, he would be flat. So they are completely giving themselves. It's a total yajna of the body, mind and soul. So we should try our best to take up services in such a way that the problem is we don't want to burn out the body because we want to also be blissful. So he was telling when he was going this time, he said, my soul is blissful but my body is finished. He was telling. So he said it is like post Radhanaga, he was telling. He was going, returning back to Bombay. He was really damn tired, but he had worked very hard in the 1 week. He gave himself to so many devotees, giving his time and energy. So I think these things can help us to forget Maya and remember Krishna more and more. Thank you very much. Can we do 5 minutes, Kirtan?